There was a time when learning to dance was considered to be almost as essential as reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Social dance all but disappeared in Iowa and around the rest of the country, taking with it many of the ballrooms that people love to go to. Now, people are watching the stars dance on television, and enrollment in dance classes is rising. In the next hour, we'll talk about the resurgence of social and ballroom dance. I'll talk with Tamara Kendworthy, president of the Castle Club of Des Moines, and Janice Baker, who teaches dance at Iowa State University. We'll also take a look back at the glory days of Iowa's ballrooms. With Myron Kelleher, he's compiled a vast collection of memorabilia from many of Iowa's ballrooms, and Jim Juve, who's owner of the Country View in Decorah. We'd also like to hear from you. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. There was a time not so very long ago when pretty much everyone knew how to dance, and a lot of people knew how to dance well. You've probably seen those couples and maybe envied them who can take the dance floor at a wedding. They can jitterbug, foxtrot, polka, waltz, and move together across the floor. In the next hour, we will talk about the dancing culture that was and the culture that is today. In the second half of the program, we're going to reminisce about the heyday of the Iowa ballrooms, and we'll talk about the ballrooms that are still around. But right now, we're going to talk about dancing. Janice Baker is an assistant professor of dance at Iowa State University. Hello, Janice.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Tamara Kenworthy is the president of the Castle Club in Des Moines. Hello, Tamara.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And Janice, I want to start with you. What kinds of dance classes and clubs are you involved with at Iowa State?
We offer a full battery of dance classes, both in traditional ballet, jazz, tap, technique, as well as modern dance, which is our mainstay. But then very, very popular are our ballroom dance classes. And I like to refer to them as social dance classes because we do have a competitive ballroom dance group that competes intercollegiately. We have a social dance group that meets on Fridays. We also now have a swing group, Cyclone Swing Society, that now is starting a performance group also. And there's Celtic dance also. So as well as the hip-hop culture is wildly popular on campus. So I really celebrate our wide diversity. We also have Descarga, which is a Hispanic dance group. So many dance clubs on campus, as well as our modern dance performance groups.
Well, let's talk about ballroom dance versus social dance. What kinds of different dances would be involved in those two categories?
Well, ballroom includes international form. Sometimes it's just simply the syllabus or the steps that are executed. In social dance, as long as no one's falling over because they're too dizzy or there's no blood involved, anything goes, you know.
So, but that's the kind of thing that we would see people doing at weddings. And that's the kind of culture that we're talking about, when people would go to the ballroom on Friday night or Saturday night and just dance together.
Enjoy themselves and enjoy each other and enjoy the music and being social with one another and sharing partners. I mean, dancing with your mother-in-law as well as your sister as well as your brother. So everyone's dancing together.
Have you seen a lot of interest increasing in your dance classes and dance clubs over the past few years?
Oh, definitely. When I first came to Iowa State, we had Orchestras 1 and Orchestras 2, our modern dance group, and the ballroom dance club on Friday evenings. And since then, we have at least, the Cyclone Ballroom and also our competitive ballroom dance group. So we've doubled the amount of offerings that we have now.
Why do you think there's so much more interest now?
Well, I think we're finally returning to our roots. As an indigenous culture, we celebrated dance, music, and each other as an organic gathering. When you gathered together, there was music and food. Food is part of that culture, too. I think sometimes that's neglected. But music, dance, song, food, that's how you celebrate. And we're just returning to a much more pleasant time.
So you don't put it all down to people watching Dances with the Stars on television?
No. My philosophy is I think it's a spectacle. It makes it into we want to watch it, but then we don't translate into doing it. So we think, my colleagues and I, there should be a show called Dancing with the Plumber. So it would be, an ordinary guy, an ordinary couple who celebrate each other and just have a good time. I think the astronaut that was on Dancing with the Stars, I think he brought that. that, you know.
The problem that I experienced in my past when I would try to sign up for dance classes and dance clubs is that I'm a tall woman, and there would always be way too many females and not enough males, and I would always have to lead because I could see. Do you find now that interest seems to be growing, that more men are participating in these classes?
Yes. Well, here at Iowa State, you know, we have a lot of engineers and we have a lot of computer guys. And so our ratio from women to men is a little unrealistic. But still, I have classes where we're heavy with women, and but we rotate. And then I make this big call and say, OK, I need dancing guys. Go to your next class. Recruit, recruit, recruit. And by the end of the day, I usually have 10 more men. So sometimes it's just opening the door and saying, it's safe, it's friendly, we're going to have a great time, don't be afraid. The fear is what helps keep people off the dance floor.
Tamara, you are president of the Castle Club in Des Moines, which is a members-only dancing organization. Tell me a little bit about the Castle Club.
Sure, I'd love to. You know, we have a phrase on our website that describes Castle Club of the tradition of elegance from an earlier era while adding to the sophistication of dance today. And our club was formed in 1913. It's in its 98th year. And it's really, as I think Janice made a great point, that even though this is a formal dance club, everybody just comes to have a good time and have a lot of fun. And we have seven dances each year and meet on Friday nights once a month down at the Des Moines Club in downtown Des Moines. And it is a formal occasion, but we added last year a masquerade ball in October, and everybody's coming in costume now. And in February, we have a sweethearts dance. So it's really just an opportunity to get out on the dance floor and do some of those dances that you never get to do anyplace else, because there's just not the occasion or the opportunities to do so.
And when you say a formal dance club, you're actually talking about long gowns and tuxedos.
Right, right. The men are in tuxedos, and the women are either in waltz length or evening gowns. And it does make it for a really nice evening, especially when we're up on top of the Des Moines Club looking down over the city. It's really a wonderful evening.
How many members do you have?
We have currently 36 couples, and I'm really appreciative of the show you're doing this morning, because I think there are a lot of people out there who would love to belong to a dance club, but just don't know where to go. My husband Marty and I were in that same situation. We started taking lessons about 12 years ago, on and off, but you have to practice it to get better, and we really didn't know where we could actually go in a more formal setting. And we had some friends in Castle Club who told us about it. And so I think this show is great, because there are several clubs in the Central Iowa area, and there are places to go to dance. And I think that's, people just need to know where they can, where the venues are, so they can get out there and try it.
So the people who join the Castle Club, what kind of level of skill do you feel like people need to have to get out there and enjoy themselves with you?
Sure. You know, nobody is really a competitive dancer. Janice and her dancing partner, Richard, you know, they're probably the best dancers in the club. And it's fun to watch them, because they have a good time on the dance floor. They're not out there trying to be real stiff. And it's a real combination of this formal dance with having fun. But, you know, really the members, we know how to waltz. We know how to foxtrot. We do the swing. And we have three Latin dances, the cha-cha, rumbo, and tanga, that are typically done throughout the evening. And I think as long as you know the basic steps of those dances, you should be able to hold your own. When Marty and I started, we really just knew the basic steps. And from our lessons, we've just kept adding steps and adding steps. So, you know, to explore and experiment and come as a guest to these dances, as long as you know how to do those basic steps, you really can make your way around the dance floor just fine. And nobody's watching to see who can do what and who can't do what. It's really about everybody having a good time together.
Tamara, when you first started taking these lessons 12 years ago, what drew you to this kind of dance?
Well, I started dance lessons when I was three and danced all the way through college. And actually, if I hadn't gone to college, I was going to be a dance teacher. And so I've had that passion for dance my whole life. And when I got out of college, I got away from dance. And then I kind of gradually got back into some tap classes and thought, you know, I want to really get into ballroom dance lessons. And Marty, my husband's been a good sport. I'm not sure when I first mentioned it to him. He was probably thinking, what, are you crazy? I'm not going to get out there and do that. And now I think he really has a good time. So I've just had that passion forever. And whether you've taken dance lessons for a long, long time as a young person, or even if you haven't, people do. You talked earlier to intro the show about skill. I think it's a learned skill. It's not something that everybody can get out there and express themselves in different ways. And there's a lot of opportunity to do that. And you may not like all of those six dances, but usually everybody has their favorites. But you typically kind of just keep getting better and better the more that you do it.
Well, Tamara, you mentioned that you kind of had to cajole your husband. And Janice, you were talking about recruiting males to your classes. Why do you think that there's this reluctance, a greater reluctance among men to do this kind of thing?
Well, no one wants to look silly on the dance floor. You know, everyone wants to look elegant or at least skillful. And so that element of fear, it's just all about being afraid of being silly. But actually, that's the healthy part. The more that you become comfortable with yourself and just experimenting, as Tamara was saying, just try out a few steps and get your foot wet. And then it just takes over and becomes an incredibly rewarding pastime.
Now, of course, when you talk to people about trying dance or taking dance lessons, you will often hear things like, oh, I can't dance. I don't know how to dance. I'm not a good dancer. So, Janice, what do you need to be able to learn to dance?
Well, there's a fantastic film called Take the Lead. And in there, the instructor says, dancing is just organized walking. So the more that it can be simplified and just take one step at a time and take one simple dance and just get that rhythm down and feel comfortable with that. And then the more brave you get to dance with other people that have some skill and they're kind, and dancers love to share what they do, because as Tamara was saying, it becomes a lifelong passion. I had the great privilege of sharing some tango steps with one of the guards at the Des Moines Art Center. He said, I was doing some simple research there, and he realized I was a dancing teacher, and he said, oh, could you teach me some tango steps so I could surprise my wife? Because they dance every evening after their supper in the basement. So there's closet dancers, too.
Well, we'll talk more about the experience of dancing and what you get out of that in a moment. We're talking about dancing today on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Janice Baker, an assistant professor of dance at Iowa State University, and Tamara Kenworthy. She's president of the Castle Club in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa.
Hey there, cutes, put on your dancing boots and come dance with me. Come dance with me, what an evening for some terpsichore.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about dancing. In just a few minutes, we're going to reminisce a little bit about the culture that was, the ballrooms all across Iowa where people used to go on Friday and Saturday nights and dance the night away to live bands. Throughout the decades, the big bands into the rock and roll bands, and a lot of that culture has disappeared, although some of it remains. So we'll talk about the culture that remains, and we'd also love to hear from you. Share your memories or talk about where you like to go dancing now. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And if you are a dancer, right now we're talking about people who are keeping this culture alive. If you are a dancer, we'd love to hear about your experiences and what you get out of going to dances or dressing up in a ball gown or a tuxedo and doing some ballroom dances. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guests right now are Tamara Kenworthy. She's president of the Castle Club in Des Moines, which is a formal dance club where people do wear tuxedos and ball gowns and go and foxtrot and do all kinds of other dances. Janice Baker is an assistant professor of dance at Iowa State University. And Tamara, I'm sure as you are one of the people who is keeping this dancing culture alive, you've probably reflected on this a little bit. Why do you think that this kind of culture disappeared? Why did people stop doing this?
You know, that's a really good question. And I wonder if it's, you know, the change in music that we had over the years when, you know, we had Elvis and then the Beatles. And I think that the music changed. And so it altered then the type of dancing that could be done. And I would imagine maybe in the 60s and that movement, you know, from that and then in the disco in the 70s. I just think that might have been part of the reason. I'm not really sure otherwise.
What do you think about that, Janice?
Well, I think there's the aspect of age segregation, that we begin to consume of music sort of in a not a family setting. Because when my mother was growing up in rural Iowa, they had platform dances, and everyone would gather together, however they got there, and spend the evening, kids, adolescents, you know, grandma's, grandpa's, parents, everyone dancing. And so the small ones saw the older ones dancing, and there was this great heritage of learning how to dance. And that, to me, is the most articulate way to deliver this medium, is through the family unit. And when we began to go out, you know, not with our children and, you know, consuming of music in different ways, and the children going out and without their parents, which, you know, that's fine. It's wonderful to be, you know, with your peers. But then again, that may not be the best delivery of social dance.
Well, I think about the kind of dancing that we did when I was in junior high and growing up. And of course, this is the very individualistic dancing to faster songs. And then slow dancing was always painfully awkward, at least most of the time was painfully awkward, where you just stood together and sort of stepped back and forth. And I think that it would have been a lot more fun had we actually known some steps and known how to dance a little bit. But why do you think that stopped being passed along?
Well, physical education has tried to become a delivering agent. So, but if that physical education teacher doesn't have dance in their background and they are not familiar and comfortable, they may not deliver it, you know, in a most pleasant manner to help people become passionate, because, you know, you have to be passionate about what you're presenting to inspire your students. But we're getting back little by little. There's the Ukrainian immigrants that come. I couldn't believe it when I have a dance studio in Des Moines also, and I had people coming to my door saying, "Do you have ballroom dance for 5-year-olds?" And then to an exchange program, one of the Ukrainian women dance teachers said to me, "Well, we train the 5-year-olds so that then we can get the parents." And then it goes back to that family unit of the most lucrative for the learner way to consume of dance is with your family. And to relax, again, have food and have a celebration. So my students at Iowa State who are enrolled in ballroom dancing classes, I say, go home and try some of this stuff, you know, during your holidays, and then ask them, well, how'd it go? You know, so they become, they're not simply taking class for themselves. They're becoming, I call them the missionaries of the dance, that it's their job to then go back and share dance, because it's such a fantastic life experience. It's sort of inhumane not to share.
Well, what do you get out of that experience of being on the dance floor and dancing with someone, whether it's your life partner, someone you're involved with, or just someone else? And Tamara, you can respond to that first. Mm-hmm. What do you get out of the experience of dancing?
Well, certainly it's great exercise. I will say that, too. I mean, it's you really get a good workout, if you want to call it that. And that's important to me to stay healthy. But I think, you know, this form of dance, you are being able to enjoy your partner in a very artistic and with emotion as far as that movement. And I think that's important. It is, you know, as Janice said, it's social dancing. And I'm not sure the dancing that we grew up with in the 70s, 80s would necessarily have been, it was a different form of social dancing. But this truly is, you know, our Castle Club, with its history, used to actually while back had dance cards still, but I'm not sure when they stopped doing that. We now have a mixer. And it's interesting because, you know, you're used to dancing with your own partner, but in ages back, you know, everybody knew how to dance, so you could really mix it up and feel very comfortable. And I think that's one of the things that is kind of fun is even though you're used to dancing with your partner, when we do a mixer now in the middle of the evening, and you do have to dance with other people for one dance before we take a break and have some dessert and coffee, it does kind of stretch you a little bit, and you have to learn how to lead and follow with different people. So, you know, it's good for your coordination skills, and but I think ultimately, though, it's just you know, whether you have a passion for dance or you just enjoy dancing, I'm not sure I'm using the best words, but it's just a great feeling and to be very artistic. And, you know, there's so many artistic people out there that are singers and artists, visual artists. And I think it's actually the one form where everybody can actually play a role in. Not everybody can sing well, not everybody is a painter, but it is an art form that everybody could do and get out on the dance floor and express themselves.
Janice, when people come to you to learn to dance, is there any sense of discomfort about personal space? Because this is something that we don't do with people very often, and you do have to get up close and personal with people that you don't know well.
Definitely. That's a sort of a learning curve. You want to start out, and we start out in the open position, and I usually start with merengue because it's just walking. And then from there we go into the closed position, but we don't go into the, you know, 5 points of contact that International Frame uses, so you're not, you know, completely touching your person, your other person. So definitely that's an issue, but we try to get by that with just using the open position and allowing people to become very comfortable with one another. And usually that all melts away.
Margaret is on the line in Moline. Hello, Margaret.
Yes, hello. How are you?
I'm great. What would you like to talk about?
I'll make three quick comments. The first one is I do agree we don't have the role modeling we used to. We don't take our children to weddings and those sorts of events. They're usually adults only, so they don't see us dancing. The second one is I think we've become passive. We are watching TV and playing video games, and that's kind of the exercise a lot of people are doing. But most importantly, there is a huge dancing culture among our Hispanic community on both sides of the river. Lots of dancing, maybe not formal, but it's everything from slow, where you're touching couples, the merengue, the samba, the cumbias, and there's a lot of opportunities. Everybody's welcome. You can go either, usually DJs, but live bands as well. So if someone wants to dance, it's out there frequently in the Hispanic community. That's still a very important part of the culture is the dance.
And you sound like a dancer, Margaret.
We are. My husband and I have been married 42 years and known each other longer than that. We dance a lot. We love to dance.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for your call, Margaret.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we are going to switch gears here and talk about the ballrooms across the state of Iowa. But Janice, I want to give you an opportunity before we leave, since I asked Tamara about what she gets out of the dancing experience. What do you get out of social dance or partner dancing?
Well, I always say I have this saying, dance is the uses of dance within culture. It's physical, entertainment, artful, reverent, and social. And that spells pairs. And to me, dance is a food. It's a nutrient. It's something I have to do because if I don't do it, I don't feel healthy. So in the morning, I love to stretch. In the afternoon, something more aerobic. And then the evening, you should be dancing with people that you love and enjoying that physical contact that's so intimate but not sexual and translates to help helping people feel loved and cared for and truly part of your life.
Well, Janice, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Janice Baker is an assistant professor of dance at Iowa State University. And Tamara, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tamara Kenworthy is president of the Castle Club in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we are talking about dancing. And right now we're going to start reminiscing about the history of ballrooms across the state of Iowa. Myron Kelleher is with us. He's been collecting memories and memorabilia about these ballrooms. He's put many of them together on the website iowaballroom.com. Myron, hello.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. And, glad to be here.
And Jim Juve is also with us. He's owner of the Country View in Decorah. He also has worked for a number of other Iowa ballrooms throughout the years. Hello, Jim.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here. And Myron, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the history of the ballrooms across the state. How many were there?
Well, I don't know as anybody knows. I don't know as well or be able to find out. But they were community centers is what they were. Some people say that there was as many as 250 of them in the state of Iowa. And I suppose they ranged in size from, you know, venues that would hold 100 people up to venues that would hold 2,000 or 3,000. So depending on the metropolitan area that they were situated in.
Well, and you say metropolitan area, but a lot of them were in very small towns.
Yes, they were. One of the probably the most active ballroom in the state of Iowa is in a little town of Woodward, Iowa, northwest of Des Moines, about 25 miles. And I don't think this town is over 500-600 people. But probably the most active ballroom in state Iowa.
And what's the name of that ballroom?
It's Lake Robbins.
Lake Robbins. And when we talk about the history of these ballrooms, when did they first start appearing?
The turn of the century, I think. I'm sure there was community center start or type ballrooms before that, but I think the term ballroom came about as the traveling bands started up, and that was after the turn of the century. Bands would travel around the state or the country, and of course still goes on today after 100 years. But gosh, I don't know. I guess probably I would say a turn of the century, although the Call Ballroom in Davenport has a history going back to the 1880s, still in operation today. It's burnt down once or twice, but has been rebuilt and still active today.
Well, and I suppose when people wanted to dance before the traveling bands, they'd probably have a country dance where somebody would play the fiddle and people would come together and dance. As the culture of traveling bands grew, and I am thinking about the 30s and the 40s when the big bands were traveling on the regional circuits,
yes.
What was the culture of these ballrooms like then?
Oh, my. I would have... I would like to have experienced it. These traveling bands, too, you got to realize that they would travel. They would set up an itinerary, and they might hit, like Glenn Miller Band might come into Iowa and hit 3, 4, 5 ballrooms in the state of Iowa on 3 to 5 successive nights. They would all be within a couple hours driving time. And a lot of times ballrooms back in the 20s and 30s, there was a common owner to 2 or 3 or 4 ballrooms. So it was much easier to set up these schedules. But it was a family entertainment that has since been replaced by bowling alleys, television, of course, the internet, pool halls, and so forth.
Well, when I think about the ballroom culture, I guess I would think about people going out on Friday or Saturday nights. But it sounds to me, if these bands were booked night after night, so they could make the most of their journey. There must have been things going on at some of these ballrooms all the time.
Yes. I have a brother-in-law who's 87 years old, and him and my sister lived in Waterloo. And every night of the week, within 50 or 60 miles, they could go to a ballroom and dance. The Riviera in Janesville, the Coliseum in Owine, of course, Electric Park in Waterloo, Gala Ballroom in Independence. And that's what they did a lot of that. And a lot of people did. Every night of the week, they could go dancing.
We're talking about ballrooms all across the state of Iowa this hour, and we'd love to hear your memories as well. If you go dancing now or you used to go dancing, we'd love to hear about the ballrooms that you used to visit at 866-780-9100. I'm talking with Myron Kelleher, who has put a lot of memories of these ballrooms together on the website iowaballroom.com. Jim Juve is also with us. He's the owner of the Country View, a dance hall in Decorah, and we'll talk with him about having a modern dance hall and also dance halls and ballrooms through the years. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about dancing, and right now we're taking a look back at the heyday of the ballrooms all across the state of Iowa, and we're going to talk about the ballrooms that are still in existence as well. And you're welcome to join our conversation. If you have some memories you'd like to share of your favorite ballroom, or if you have a favorite place to go dancing today, let us know about it. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me are Myron Kelleher. He's been collecting memories of these ballrooms on his website, iowaballroom.com, and Jim Juve, who is owner of the Country View in Decorah, a modern dance hall, and he also was a booker for a number of other Iowa ballrooms and dance halls in the past. Jim, tell me a little bit about your history with some of the other ballrooms in the state.
Well, I started, my folks always went to Modder's Ballroom in the 40s. And different people in the 40s, that was the meeting place, the social place to go was the ballrooms. And so that's how we learned to dance. There was nine kids in our family, and my mother and dad would dance with us. We learned to do the two-step and the waltz and shoddish and square dancing and all that, and that was the social thing. We didn't have TVs back then or anything like this, so in this area here, everybody either went to Modder's Ballroom or Rainbow Gardens in Waterville or the Opera House in Waukon or the Inwood in Spillville, and the Inwood normally had dances on Thursday night, and Modder's was Saturday night. But if they had a special band come in, Leonard Modder, who was a big promoter of these, they had, Lawrence Welk appeared at Modder's Ballroom, Big Tiny Little, Jules Herman, Gerald Gilbertson, Andy Dahl, Leo Grieco, who's still on WMT Radio on his Sunday afternoon show, still promotes the old country and the old dance tunes. But people back then, that was the social thing to do. And everybody went, and everybody danced with everybody. They met everybody. This was the social thing to do. You'd ask people to dance and things like this. And that's how I got started in the ballroom and the entertainment business was way back then.
What got you hooked on it when you were going to those dances with your parents and experiencing that culture? What was it that made you want to be a part of it?
Well, it was just the social aspect of it, all the people. And see, people came from miles. I mean, back in the 40s, you know, to get someplace, it was very difficult, especially in the wintertime. A lot of people would come to Modder's in the 40s. They'd have horses and sleighs in the wintertime, and the roads were very bad. But, boy, any way they could do to get there, they would get there, because they would get to people from Waukon, Waterville, Harmony, Minnesota. And then if you could dance, I mean, it was something that... Like the one lady says, some people, all people aren't good dancers, all good singers. But if you could really dance, I mean, people knew if you could dance, and then everybody wanted to dance. And they had the big social; they'd have the circle twos and that, so you'd get to meet other people. And people weren't afraid of meeting people and that, because people respected one another. So, you know, there wasn't the contact had nothing to do with it. You respected people. And, you have to, in order to dance a waltz or a two-step, you have to have contact with people. And people just respected that, and there was very few problems. But it was just great to go out and get to meet these people and dance.
Trudy is on the line from Iowa City at 866-780-9100. Hello, Trudy.
Hi. I was just standing in the kitchen hearing this and brought back memories of, I'm a photographer, and when I first moved to the area, I was in Wellman, Iowa, and I'm not sure of the name of the ballroom down there. I think it's the Maple Crest or Maple. Are you familiar with it, you guys?
Myron, do you know?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, okay. It's still there, actually, and it's been different businesses, but... when I first moved there, it was in 94, 95, and I wanted to interview people who were turning 100 or 100 years old that were, residents of Wellman, and I wanted to know more of the history of this ballroom. And one of the gals that I interviewed, actually all the people I interviewed, there was about a dozen of them, their best memories were of this ballroom, and they talked about the Dorsey brothers and Lawrence Welk. But one gal in particular, her name was Clara, and she said that she remembered going there when she was little and standing on her dad's feet, and she was 100 in 1995. And then she goes, but then when I got older, she goes, when I got married, I found out you went there to get warmed up. And she kind of leaned in towards me in the convalescent home, and I go, warmed up? I thought, what is she talking about, romance or whatever? And she goes, no, we went up to the cemetery, and in the parking lot we could get our hooch. And I go, your hooch? She goes, it's prohibition, honey. We had to get warmed up in the winter. And so for her and her family and friends, it was a place, a source for their alcohol during prohibition. So she told me that's how they got warmed up in the winter.
Oh, wow. What a great story, Trudy. Thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
No problem.
Myron, what is it that drew you into this world? What's your history with the ballrooms?
I guess it sprang off my interest in genealogy, my family history. In the late 90s, I started my family history. And, of course, when I was a kid, I grew up in a town in New Hampton. And we were an hour away from four or five different ballrooms. And as teenagers, I grew up in the late 50s, early 60s. And, of course, the rock and roll explosion was coming about. So every weekend we could drive somewhere, Decorah or Waterloo or Clear Lake, the Surf Ballroom, and see one of the big stars. It was, Everly Brothers, Johnny Cash, it just goes on and on. You know, pay a buck and a quarter and see one of the big stars. And so that's, that's how I got hooked.
Jim, you were involved in booking people through the years as these ballrooms shifted to rock and roll and embraced the new sound. How did the culture change?
Well, when I was at Modder's, a gentleman by the name of Dale Wood, who worked at KOEL and O-Line in the 50s, him and Mr. Modder, Leonard, who I work for, back then the rock and roll era was really coming in the mid-50s. One of the first big shows they had at Modder's was Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps. And Dale Wood, he promoted it on KOEL, and him and Leonard brought these artists in. And he was one of the first big ones. They had a lot of the big artists in the 50s that came, you know, Johnny Cash, Conway Twitty. Well, it's about 50 years ago Conway Twitty was at Modern's Ballroom, December of 58, a little over, longer than that. But a lot of these artists, they brought them in, and Dale brought them mostly to Modern's Ballroom. He had some at Harmony at the Rec Center there. He had some at the Opera House in Waukon. He had some at the Coliseum in Waukon. But they brought these artists in, and, you know, you got to meet him. Johnny Cash was here in Decorah, and a true story about Johnny, he came here in the 60s, early 60s, and he come from down south, no antifreeze in his car, and is kind of a halfway Cadillac, but it was more of a car than a Cadillac. And anyway, he forgot to put antifreeze, so he took it down to Red Cronin. And when he did the show, I took him down there, and then we picked him up, and then he gave Red Cronin a bad check. And about 20-some years later, June Carter Cash sent Red Cronin what he owed plus the interest on it. That's just one of the stories of Johnny Cash when he appeared at Modern's Ballroom in Decorah.
Oh, wow. And what did he keep? Did he keep a record of all of his debts?
Red Cronin sent a copy of the bill to June Carter Cash. No, somebody had kind of said, well, you ought to send it to her because, you know, and she took and sent the money because he'd wrote him a check. So he sent a copy of the bad check that wasn't any good, see, and so she took and sent the money. But there was many, many people that appeared, like Myron says, you know, there's back then the star power of these local artists, and you got in to see these people for a dollar. Wanda Jackson appeared at Modern's a couple of times. One time was 1961, New Year's Eve. Cost a dollar to see her, Wanda Jackson and the Party Timers. But there was all kinds of artists. You had your Johnny Paycheck. We've had the Platters, the Diamonds. The list goes on and on that we've had here in Decorah. And we still take, in that country view, we still have the old-time dancing. We took an old barn and made it into a dance hall and a club. What I noticed, I was a disc jockey. I started working with Dale Wood, and I did my first record hop in the 50s. We got a whole quarter to come in and do a record hop, which I was, Dale Wood, to me, around here, Dick Biondi and WLS in Chicago, they were the first what you would call DJs. And so then that went on. We got a whole $5 for going out and doing a record hop. We did a lot of the schools, a lot of the old different centers around. But I noticed as the time went on in the 50s, people were dancing because it was if you were a good dancer, I mean, you were on the floor all the time. And then as I DJ'd and went into, I had bars. I've had bars ever since the 60s. And as the disco thing came in and the line dancing came in, you started getting that separation from, because if you weren't a good dancer and you didn't know how to two-step, you know, if you remember back in the 60s and 70s, or especially the 70s, they had line dancing classes. I mean, you look at all the bars big time. And then what the demise, and I think Myron will agree, the demise of the ballrooms was all of a sudden all the bars around started having these little three-piece bands for free. And then pretty soon the ballrooms just slowly started dwindling away because you took 100 here and 100 there and 100 here, and pretty soon there was nobody left to go to the ballrooms.
Right. Well, and of course, as you were booking these big acts, it probably made a lot of sense to book them into a larger auditorium where you could get more people.
Yeah, well,
and make more money.
Most of the things that I did here myself, I didn't book into a lot of other ballrooms. Mostly in the Decorah here, in Rainbow Gardens in Waterville. We leased that in the early 60s, and we had entertainers down there like Jules Herman, Jan Howard, Charlie Walker, Johnny Paycheck, Jeannie Seeley, and the old country artists. But you could get them very reasonable, $300-$400 back then, where now, you know, you have the big concerts. But what's really bad about the big concerts, and you go to these places, you go to your casinos, they don't have places for people to dance. If you look at the concerts, they don't make a place. If they do, they're dancing in the aisles. And you know, society has just got away. First of all, even I noticed in the late 50s and early 60s, a lot of the guys, they thought you were kind of a pansy or something if you danced anymore. That wasn't macho enough, you know. When they had the Macho Man contest, when we had the bar, we had a bar downtown Decorah called the Tap Room. And we had live music Tuesday through Saturday. And we'd have all these conscious Foxy Lady Nights, Macho Man, and so that was a big thing. But it just kept getting away, and as they got away from it, then people got away from it. And now you just have your older people that are doing your dancing, and it's a dying art. You know,
we were talking. Maybe more people are getting involved. Bonnie gave us a call from Ames. Hello, Bonnie.
Yes.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I love to ballroom dance, and it's been rather recent in my life because even though my late husband and I knew about Lake Robbins Ballroom, we had never really checked it out. So when he passed away 6 years ago, a widow friend invited me to ride down with her from Ames, and it's so close, and it can be a little hard to find the first time, but it really isn't that difficult. But It's a wonderful, wonderful ballroom. It's the original floor. It's 79 years old, and they've been very, very careful with taking care of the floor, not allowing beverages, you know. But it's they have live big bands every Sunday night, and then she does country western some on Fridays and Saturdays. But then later, after about a year, I met my current fiancé there. He was widowed, and he came to Lake Robbins. So
it's been a lot of fun, and it's brought you together with someone special. That's fantastic.
And a lot of people have met there and have even been married there. It's quite a history.
Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us.
And I wanted to mention that New Year's Eve, she's having a wonderful band, Ken Paulson, from the Quad City area. And there will be a dinner, hors d'oeuvres, and whatever. So it's sad because we really need more people coming. I mean, she struggles to stay open at times because of, you know, bad weather. Last winter was very difficult. But anyway, we're just hoping more younger folks will, and they have, with Dancing with the Stars. It has, increased more interest in ballroom dancing.
Oh, well, Bonnie, again, thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
We have an email here as well. This is from Crystal in Coralville. She says, I have to say thanks to Janice, who was on in the first half of the show, for teaching me to ballroom dance at Iowa State University a few years ago. I took dance lessons from when I was a little kid, but I'd never done any partner dancing until college. And at that point, I fell in love with ballroom dancing. I taught my now husband to dance, and we love to dance, but have trouble finding places in the Iowa City area. So that's where you come in, Myron. Are there any dance halls in Eastern Iowa that are still up and running where people can go and dance?
Well, right in the Iowa City area, it's pretty slim. The Walford, there's a Ponderosa Ballroom in Walford, Iowa. It's a little southwest of Cedar Rapids. Other than that, little clubs. The casino at Riverside has a small dance floor. Other than that, it's traveling to Waterloo at Electric Park or to Davenport Call Ballroom.
All right. Well, and you do have a list of all of a lot of the active ballrooms up on your website. And so people can go to iowaballroom.com to look for some ideas. Myron Kelleher, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Jim Juve, thank you very much. He's the owner of the Country View in Decorah and booked a number of other ballrooms in the past. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Catherine Perkins. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support from Michael Yeager in Ames, Phil Moss in Cedar Falls, and John Pemble in Des Moines. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about gratitude. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Dance, dance, dance. Dance, dance, dance all night long.